Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, as you've been hearing, leaders from around the world are gathering in Baku in Azerbaijan from today to continue efforts to address runaway climate change at the UN's COP summit. But despite 2024 being the hottest year on record, key figures, including Joe Biden, Ursula von der Leyen and Xi Jinping, are expected to skip the event. And in an echo of last year's conference, a top official from the oil-rich Azerbaijan host has been accused of using the event to set up deals for fossil fuel exploration. Caroline O'Doherty, environment correspondent with the Irish Independent, is in Baku. Good morning, Caroline.
Good morning.
It's being billed as the finance COP, Caroline, getting money to the poorer countries who are feeling the effects of climate change. Will you explain the issues there, what they're hoping to achieve, how they're going to address that?
Yes, sure. In around 2009, it was agreed that, you know, poorer countries can't do the things that we need them to do, basically emulate what we're trying to do to adapt to climate change. That means get rid of fossil fuels, build out renewable energy, build up flood defences. You look at our buildings, retrofit, all of those kind of things that we're struggling to do when we're slow at doing them. But if you're a poorer country, you don't have the money to do that. You don't have the resources. You don't have the expertise. You don't have the governance, the regulations, and you don't have the international companies interested in coming in. They'll come in certainly and exploit your oil and gas, but they're not going to come in and build a wind turbine. And they can't get money on the international markets because they're poor countries with often instability and poor governance situations. So it was recognised way back then that if poorer countries are going to adapt to a climate changing world and protect themselves and not be tempted to exploit their oil and gas reserves, their untapped oil and gas reserves, they're going to need assistance, financial assistance from the richer countries. After many years, a fund was agreed and put in place of about $100 billion a year to be made available. Now, there's disputes about how that's being made available. A lot of it is loans, and loans come with interest rates. Some of it, they want more of it in grants and so on. But even if that could be sorted out, that €100 billion $1 billion a year is not enough. It's become clear that it's nowhere near sufficient, and there are talks of you could actually need, you know, $1 trillion a year to adequately and fast enough build out these countries so that they don't suffer for a start, and they don't add to the emissions going into the atmosphere.
Now, let's talk about the fact that the leaders of some of the countries that are the world's biggest polluters aren't there. Joe Biden, Xi Jinping of China, Narendra Modi of India, Ursula von der Leyen from the European Union. Does that undermine the event, the fact that they've decided not to go?
I think even objectively, yes, it does. You know, this, you'll hear each one of those in their own way declare that climate change is the existential crisis, the biggest crisis we've ever faced. And then they don't turn up for the actual COP meeting. Their delegations are here. And in most cases, their delegations are here. And some of them are very large delegations. But the first couple of days from tomorrow and the next day is dedicated to the world leaders. It's called the World Leaders Climate Action Summit or the World Leaders Climate Action Segment. And for the last large number of years, they've used those 2 days to allow the world leaders to come together to sort of give a show of strength and support and unity and to send signals to the world and to the few who wouldn't turn up. Look, we're all here. We're taking this seriously, whether they are or not, but they're giving that sort of indication, that visual indication that they're here, and making a short address, each one of them, to all their peers in front of a room full of their peers about what their climate targets are and their ambitions are and what their call to each other is to do. Mm-hmm. So anyone who when they stay away, it weakens that process. It does. The negotiations go on, delegations do their speaking. But, you know, in the past, we've had world leaders who've been very, you know, good at sort of swooping in when things are lagging, when negotiations have struggled, and who have, because of their position and their weight and their influence, they're able to move things along. So the fewer leaders here, you feel that the negotiations are somewhat bureaucratic to a degree, and they don't have that maybe added impetus behind them.
The other person who isn't in the room, of course, but who looms over this is Donald Trump. Is he expected now to withdraw the United States from the Paris Agreement on climate change, Caroline? What are people saying about this? And we know he did that previously in his first term. What impact could a Donald Trump presidency have on the COP process?
Well, again, you know, the US, when it's committed to this question, again, can be very influential. You know, it has friends all over the world, and it has influence and power all over the world. So when the president dismisses the process and dismisses even the cause behind the process, obviously that's not good. We've had this up and down the situation with the US before, and even when there's been Democratic presidents in the past, you know, the US has always been slow to actually commit to tangible targets, to actual real targets on carbon reduction. So it's not just a Trump phenomenon that the US has sometimes blown hot and cold on this process. You know, there are many energy companies within the US who are pushing out renewables. It's hard to see them suddenly changing tack. They stop-start approach doesn't suit them either. You'd have to presume that they will keep going and that Donald Trump will just allow them to go on, you know, in the corner of his eye, kind of keeping an eye on them while maybe promoting more oil and gas. We don't really know what practical obstacles could be put in their place, put in front of them. But, you know, I think it's reasonable to think that they'll go on. And maybe just the process will just slow down a bit in the US. It doesn't help the process, obviously, when the US president isn't here. We will have the US's climate envoy, John Podesta, here in place of President Biden. And again, he's a man of influence and long experience in that. So he will have a press conference later today. So we may get some sense of what his hopes are for the US going forward under a Trump presidency.
And what about this guy from Azerbaijan? He's the chief executive of their COP team, but he's accused now of using the conference to set up oil and gas drilling deals. What's behind that?
Yes, this was, I suppose, a sting, a very worthy sting, though, carried out by Global Witness, a human rights and environmental organisation, because this is well suspected and has been shown in the past that they do use these events to network and to do deals. And this is the chief executive of COP29, so that's an Azerbaijani official, the Azerbaijani side of that. And he was caught on camera talking about COP in generally, but offering to, you know, to connect this apparent investor with the state oil and gas company SOCAR, and talking about their gas expansion plans, which are, you know, they're quite upfront about their gas expansion plans in Azerbaijan. But using your position in COP would seem to be a huge breach, not just of the COP hosts' asserted plans, but also the UNFCCC. I mean, they're the ones who have their stamp is on this event, and it can't be used for personal gain or company gain or country gain.
Okay, Caroline, thank you for joining us from Baku. I also want to speak to Emeritus Professor at the Faculty of Engineering and Computing at DCU, Barry McMullen. Barry, good morning to you and thank you for being with us. I mean, we've no Joe Biden, we've no Ursula von der Leyen. India, China don't have their leaders there either. Then we have, as Caroline was just telling us, the host for the second year in a row using the conference, it would seem, to cut more deals on drilling for gas and oil. Is COP fit for purpose?
Okay, so good morning. COP is an imperfect organization, definitely. And you know, it works on a basis of consensus or almost unanimity across nearly 200 nations with vastly different interests and priorities. So it's a naturally very difficult challenge for the organization. Is it not fit for purpose? Probably not, but actually changing it is itself very difficult. So, you know, from a kind of very narrow perspective, say for a country like Ireland, a small country in global terms, our interest very much is in seeing effective international cooperation. So our interest is very much to try and see as best we can to support the COP process and try and make sure that we get the best outcomes possible on a global basis. But yes, it is incredibly difficult. And with the geopolitics as it has evolved, particularly in the past year, it has certainly got much harder this year than it has been in the past. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit more about Donald Trump and what he might do. I mean, there's talk of him wanting to unwind a lot of the measures taken by Joe Biden, and he has managed to bake incentives for US industry to move towards clean energy into the economy with the Inflation Reduction Act. We heard Donald Trump saying drill, baby, drill at his victory speech. So have we a handle yet on how he's going to approach climate change?
We don't have a clear handle. I mean, he certainly obviously withdrew from the Paris Agreement last time around, is quite likely to do so again. Even more seriously, he may seek to have the US withdraw from the overarching framework convention on climate change, which would be much more difficult to reverse under any future presidency. So that's not good. But as you say, the Biden presidency brought in this Inflation Reduction Act, as it was called, which put in place a lot of incentives for various clean and renewable energy technologies. And that is bringing economic development and jobs to even red states in the US. So from Trump's own perspective, he may not want to completely unwind it, but he will certainly, I think it's likely that administration will look for opportunities to tweak or even more than tweak aspects of those incentives to more favour oil and gas interests. And you might wonder, well, how is that conceivably possible? But oil and gas industries for many years have advocated for the idea that they can make their products clean. Now, there's very little evidence that they're making progress on that, but this goes under the name of so-called carbon capture and storage, which we talked about on your program a couple of weeks ago. So it may well be that there'll be some rejigging of incentives to try and send more money in the direction of fossil fuel interests. And it's really important, you know, in order to decarbonize energy, we have to do two separate things. We have to ramp up the supply of, you know, low carbon renewable energy sources, but we also have to ramp down fossil fuels. And unfortunately, what we've seen in the case of the US, not just under Trump, going back to Obama, Trump won, even under Biden, we've seen fossil fuel production actually increasing year on year. I mean, Trump's saying drill, baby, drill, but the US has been drilling more and more for the last 15 years and more. So it's not enough to progress the development of low-carbon energy technologies. We also need to reduce and ultimately eliminate the use of fossil fuels. And there's very little sign that this presidency will advance that particular project. And that lesson will be taken by other countries around the world, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, the former US climate envoy John Kerry visited Ireland recently, and he said the question is not will we all of us come to live in low carbon, no carbon economies. We will. The question is, will we get there in time to avoid the worst consequences of the crisis? And we know that we're on course for a near 3 degree rise, Barry, in temperatures by the end of this century, even if all of the commitments made on emissions reductions are followed through on. Do we know what that looks like?
Well, we don't know, because there's significant uncertainties in a complex global climate system. But we know that there's risks of profound disruption to human activities up to and including, and it'd be hard to quantify this, but up to and including impacts that would simply be beyond any feasible capacity for adaptation, even in wealthy developed countries. Which is a long-winded academic way of saying that there's, at those kind of temperatures, temperature rise, there's a non-zero possibility of really collapse of industrialized civilization as we understand it.
Barry, thank you very much for joining us. Barry McMullen there, and earlier we heard from Caroline O'Doherty. Coming up next, we'll get the latest on the news that an Irishman is in custody in Hungary after confessing to murder.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.